Yeah. Good afternoon, everybody. Can you hear me? Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Anna Healy-Fenton. I'm the president of the club. You're all very welcome today. Glad to see such a great turnout. We've got 102 sign-ups, which is very good news. Quick bit of housekeeping. We have the director of news for CCTV International here tomorrow. I hope any of you who haven't signed up will do that, please. His name is, I can't pronounce this very well, but Chari, I think, is an approximation. So that's tomorrow lunch. Please, can I remind you when you leave to switch on your mobile phones again? And all that remains for me to say is we're very, very happy to welcome Wang Shengwei, the editor-in-chief of the South China Morning Post, here today. And I'd just like to say that he's a brave man, because the last few editors of the South China Morning Post have declined this invitation to speak to us. So we hope you'll be very kind to him and not make him regret this brave move. And now, after only 2 months in the job, he's going to tell us all about what it's like editing Hong Kong's foremost English language newspaper, Wang Shengwei.
This one, okay. All right. Thank you, Anna, Steve, and thank you very much for coming here in this dreadful weather. And you see, a couple of days ago, one of my friends called me and said he wanted to join this lunch, and he was told it was fully booked. And so I really hope that my little talk will make your money and time worthwhile here. And so as Anna said earlier that, you know, it's actually one of my colleagues said the fact that I accepted the invitation to speak here was a very courageous decision. And, you know, this is my first time to speak at any public events since I became the editor-in-chief of SEMP. So I would like to echo Anna's saying, hope you guys can go easy on me, all right? So that I could come back again after like a 6 month or 1 year later if I'm still there. Or I could come back, if I'm not there, I could come back and tell you more, all right? All right, as agreed with Steve, that my little talk will in three parts. One is about my mainland background, who I am. And the second, I really like to address some of the speculation about me in innuendos, and in particular, my CPPCC membership. And thirdly, I understand, you know, that most, I'm sure almost all of you here are our readers. So I know that you care about this paper. And so I really want to say something about, you know, what I want to do with it. And then I will open the floor to your questions, and I will try to answer your question as much as possible. Now, who I am. This part is easy. Although I was, it was not, but it's not the case when you read the stories about me online or in print. You see, I was born in the northeastern part of city, Jilin province. I grew up there. And in 1982, I enrolled myself into the Beijing, it's called, at that time it's called the Beijing Institute of Foreign Languages. Now it's called the Beijing Foreign Studies University. My major was in English. And then upon my graduation in 1986, I went to study journalism. I'll tell you why I was interested in journalism, you know, for a someone from a small town in the northeastern part of China. And then I went to study journalism at the graduate school, at the journalism school of Graduate School of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. And not a lot of people have heard of this journalism school, because it was disbanded after 1989. Because, you know, I was among the last, because we demonstrated on the streets and the government decided to shut it down. But anyway, that's a different story. The most famous alumnus of my school is Bo Xilai. He in the first batch. He studied journalism from I think from 79 to 82, but he did not practice journalism for a single day. I think upon graduation, he went to work for the general office of the state council, and then his father sent him away to Liaoning province, where he worked his way up. Well, that has nothing to do with me. And then, after my graduation in 89, and here is also another bit of interesting story, a piece of information, you know, about my years of time, that I was among the last. I was graduated in 89, and I was among the last batch of university students that was signed to jobs. You see, until the early 90s and, you know, 1980s, you didn't have to go out and look for jobs, unlike the poor students on the mainland now. We were assigned jobs. So before I went to the graduate school of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and I was asked, I was given two choices, whether I would go and work for China Daily or I would go and work for Xinhua News Agency. So I chose China Daily. So China Daily partly funded my tuition. So upon graduation, and I went straight to work for China Daily for 2 years, I worked as a China business reporter. And then in 1992, I got a scholarship from Thompson Foundation. As many of you, the Thompson Foundation helped fund the China Daily. And I went to UK, and I attended a diploma course in Cardiff, University of Cardiff. It has a very fantastic journalism department there. And then after that, I went to London to seek some job experiences. And eventually I landed a temporary job with the BBC Chinese service. It's a very temporary job. And then by chance, I met a friend who said, you know, Hong Kong was a good place to go. So I came here, and I worked for a very respectable Chinese publication called Yadou Zhoukan for a few months. And then I went on to work for Eastern Express from the beginning to the end, from 94 to 96. And then in June 96, Eastern Express was shuttered, and I was offered a job as China business editor, China business reporter with the SCMP. So I joined SCMP in June 96, and then I was made, and then later China business editor, and then in the year 2000, I was made the China editor, and 2007, the deputy editor, and on February the 2nd of this year, I was editor-in-chief. See, it's a very simple history. I was told that this talk, which is being videoed, will be put on YouTube. So in the case, you know, starting from now, if you read anything about me, check this YouTube, all right? And let me see. And also, in addition to this YouTube, I think you can also check a report about myself, because on the in 2009, the day before the October the 1st, the 60th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic, one of my predecessors, Reg Cha, called me. At that time, I was in Beijing, and he called me. He wanted a personal account of the changes happened in China. So he asked me to write my personal experiences. So I wrote a piece, and he was very much impressed, and put that piece as our splash on the paper the next day. It's on the October the 1st, 2009. So that also contains lots of information about myself. You know, like for instance, how I started to get interested in English, because I accidentally turned on the radio, the shortwave radio, my grandfather's, you know, the transistor radio, and happened on the VOA frequency, and they have a very famous program called English 900. So that's how I get to study English. And I also wrote about how two Dengs, Deng Xiaoping and Deng Lijun, changed my life. And so it contains all the information over there. So you can have a look. You see the speculation about me and all the innuendos are not the first time. You see, the last time that when I was appointed as China editor was even worse, much worse. You see, after I was, you know, as all of you know, that at that time my predecessor was the famous Willy Lam. So when the announcement was made, my name was in the paper almost every day for 2 weeks. At that time, I stayed in Taikoo-Shing. Every morning I was sort of very apprehensive, like got up in the morning, I went to the 7-Eleven and bought every copy of the newspaper and then went back home and read, you know, because every time Willie's name was mentioned, that they're going to mention my name, you know, a mainlander. And I don't know how I should, say this, because it's going to be on the YouTube. And then at that time, I started to have some taste of the journalism of some media organizations in Hong Kong. You see, throughout that episode, only one reporter, local reporter, called me. And she was from RTHK and tried to call me and tried to verify some information. Of course, I did not give her any information. I directed her to our PR. But as far as I know, she was the only person to call me. And then most of the reports I have read, that's I really felt dreadful about this, is that most of the reports I have read by myself, like in the year 2000, was all made up or hearsay. And you see, the thing is, by the year 2000, I had already been in Hong Kong for more than 7 years. And I've been with the Post for 4 years, and I went to press conferences. I met a lot of local journalists, and most of them did not bother to call me to verify. So I could give you some example, you know, even including some well-respected Chinese language newspapers in Hong Kong. You know, they all printed the information that I was a reporter for People's Daily, for the People's Daily. You know, you see, in their eyes, you know, China Daily was not really government enough. So they all printed saying I was a reporter from the People's Daily. And nobody mentioned the fact, by the year 2000, I was already in Hong Kong for 7 years. It's all written in the way that I was sent by the central government to Hong Kong to take over the SCMP. You know, I'm sure, you know, some of you will understand how I you know, how I felt. Now, I would also like to say a few words about this CPPCC thing, you know, which has been, I think, in the future, every time if someone writes about my name about SCMP, and I will be that, you know, this thing will be mentioned. You see, the CPPCC, I have to got it right, it stands for the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference. This is an organization set up by the Chinese government to attract non-party members for all walks of life. It has, its main mission is to advise the authorities. It has no real power, and it meets like once a year, you know, usually a few days. You know, that's usually what I do. I joined CPPCC membership for the main reason is that, you see, you have to understand the CPPCC membership, you know, they have the membership the national level, the provincial level, the city level, the county level. Even in some township, they have CPPCC, you know, it's the kind of structure. And my membership is the Jilin, it's the Jilin membership of CPPCC. The reason that I joined this, I'm not trying to sound I'm on a high horse or something like that, but because I really believe that coming from Jilin, and I really want to do something. This is my small way to pay back and to see whether if there is anything I can do for the people of Jilin. And you know, when I joined this, it has nothing to do with the politics. I mean, when they asked me to join this, and this is one of the main reasons. Another bigger reason, which I have not said to anyone until today, is that I was really, really showing off for my parents and my folks in my hometown in Jilin. Because, you know, the CPPCC, although it has no real power, but it's really an honor thing. And I was really doing this for my folks. So at that time, I didn't realize it could have become such a big thing. Well, anyway. And what else? As a mainlander born and grew up on the mainland, and I fully understand that some of you here or outside may have concerns about the future direction of SCMP under my editorship. But there were also other points I want to make is that, you know, I also believe that, many readers of SCMP already know me well, because I have been with the company for 16 years. And I'm sure many of you have read my column, China Briefing, which I have promised to Steve. When I was first appointed, he wrote me an email and said, wondering whether I should continue. And I said, I'll continue to write up my column. And another thing I want to point out is I have been in charge of SCMP's coverage since the year 2000. And so you can see from our coverage that, you know, we try to cover the news without fear and favor. And we have never shied away from any story. You know, I can give you an example about the Li Peng diaries. A couple of years ago, we broke that story about Li Peng diary, that, you know, Li Peng was trying to have his diary published. That was not news. The news is that a couple of years ago, I got the photocopy of his diary, and we wrote like stories, and including my column news analysis, like 5 days in a row. And we broke that story. You know, we were the only one who got that diary. I mean, this is the point I want to say to you, that I will not shy away from any story. I think my time has run out, and also looking ahead, I really want to say this because I also have some colleagues here from SAP, and I'm really honored to have taken up this job, you know, in this very, very interesting time. I'm sure all of you will agree with me. You know, you know, SAP, no matter what people say about SAP, you know, SAP seems to me is a great institution in Hong Kong, and is going to celebrate its 110th anniversary next year. I mean, and then, you know, like most of the print media in Hong Kong and elsewhere, you know, we are also facing a period of great changes in, you know, in our history. You know, our readers are presented with more options, but I think despite its challenges, I truly believe SAMP has a great future, you know, because I believe that Hong Kong is certain to thrive and prosper, and, you know, despite whatever the problems China has, and China is certain to thrive and prosper. And you know, as all of you know, that, you know, the world's tension is shifting more and more to this part of the world. I mean, like the Chinese economy, you know, despite all the problems, is going to grow very strongly. I mean, you know, it's like there has been kind of consensus that the earliest, like 2020 or the latest 2030, that the Chinese economy is going to overtake that of US. So I think what I'm trying to say is that, you know, me as an editor, we will do our best to build up SAMP's unique position, you know, as a window for China. And you know, this is more important than ever. As for me, you know, my goal is to continue to build SAMP as Asia's premier source of information on Hong Kong, China, and whether in print or digital, and through our comprehensive, timely, and authoritative coverage. And of course, and then there has been, you know, concerns that because of my mainland background, I will, you know, lots of people wonder, you know, whether I will focus on expanding China coverage at the expense of the local coverage. And nothing is further from the truth. And, you know, I believe this because, you know, Hong Kong is your home and my home, and most of the SCMP readers are here, including you guys. So we will do a much better job and continue to promote the qualities that make Hong Kong such a great city. And we will continue to set a fine example and to elevate the debates and the publishing news without fear and favor and through our fair, relevant, thought-provoking coverage. And here I could give you an example that, you know, in the run-up to the CE election, you know, there was a time that, you know, most of the local media focused on the scandals, the mudslinging, and, you know, don't get me wrong, you know, they were very interesting. But I think during that period that, but the real issues really got neglected. So that's, I have started the SCMP debate series, inviting the CE candidates and other stakeholders to debate on the real issues that impact Hong Kong. And we have received great responses. And on that score, I also want to say this, because I think Anna, you know, asked me how I felt about my editorship in the first 2 months, you know. And I said this to my friends as well. I think that, you know, the thing that I worried most before I took over is, you know, usually if in China and in Hong Kong, it is very quiet after Chinese New Year. And I took over on February the 1st, and I was said to myself, you know, how could I find some interesting stories to fill in the pages? And then my fears were lit, and so, you know, this scandals, you know, involving Donald and Henry and CY, and I said to my, you know, I'm going to do this, is that when things are settling down, that I'm going to write a thank you, my personal thank you notes to Donald and Henry and CY for supplying so many interesting news items. And, you know, I mean, you know, this, and on that score, I would also like to point out that as, you know, you're from the, most of you are from, you know, my colleagues, that that I also would like to point out that for most of the, as you can see, you know, most of the Hong Kong news organizations were fearless and determined in their coverage of the CE elections. And, you know, the scandal surrounding illegal structure of the house owned by Henry's wife, a controversy over CY's role in West Kowloon projects, and our CE's free rides in yachts. The reason that I mention this is because I have read more than a few pieces on the international media praising Hong Kong's, you know, media and its role in prodding Beijing in changing its mind over whom to choose. So this, you know, I counted the words like fearless, the Hong Kong's press freedom, the freedom of the press, you know, is so important to Hong Kong, and you know the coverage is the result. So I'm really looking forward that, you know, I'm sure some of you here are working for the international media, that, you know, when you guys write about the anniversary pieces in the run-up to July, that you will not forget to stress this again, you know, the fearless Hong Kong press. Okay, I have been handing notes and saying that I need to wrap it up and open the floor to questions. So to end this, and I want to say that I and my colleagues at the paper take the trust of our readers very seriously, which means your trust. And we will continue to work very hard to honor their trust and yours. And that's it. Thank you very much for coming here, and I'm happy to answer your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shang Wei. Now, usual form, members of staff will pass around microphones. Please introduce yourself by name and organization, please. Okay, hands up for questions. Eric at the back.
Eric.
I'm the Asia-Pacific director of Agence France-Presse News Agency. Okay. So thank you. Very interesting speech. I'm interested to hear your views on Xinhua as a source of news for the South China Morning Post. I know them well in Beijing. I've been there. Twice in the past 3 years, I've been to world media summits in Beijing with my colleagues from AP, Reuters, BBC. Xinhua clearly has ambitions to join the main news agencies as an independent news source internationally, but obviously it's a news agency for China. So what's your advice to your editorial team when they're treating Xinhua photographs and stories? Do you say treat this like any other news agency, or do you say treat it with as a source from China, but also with kid gloves, because obviously it's the state news agency, so it has to be looked at as such.
Okay, thank you. You see, we treat Xinhua News Agency, you know, as much as we treat other news agencies. But in fact, we also treat Xinhua as a very important source of information. I mean, Anna asked me, during the lunch, and she said, if there is only one newspaper, and except for SNP, what would you read? And I think that's a very difficult question because every day I read more than a dozen hard copies, the newspapers, and also I log on websites, like a dozen websites as well. But one website I'll go and check every morning is the Xinhua News Agency. I mean, because on the one hand, the Xinhua wants to become an international news organization, but the fact remains it is the premier source of information that the Chinese government relies on to release information. And sometimes we read the Xinhua stories and try to read between the lines to see whether there was any government changes or not. I could give you an example. This is something that's we are following today. It's probably going to appear on tomorrow's paper. So you're going to read it today. Is that, you see, over the weekends, I cannot remember whether it's People's Daily or PLA Daily. I cannot remember. One of my colleagues is now digging up the information. Ever since Bushlow sacked, right, the government is building up a campaign to paint him as a bad guy. So over the past few days, there were many, many editorials. In one of the editorials, either on Saturday or Sunday, it talking about how the government should be resolute in cracking down on corruption, and then it mentioned that the. It particularly cited the examples of Liu Qingshan, Zhang Zishan. Those two names may not be familiar to you, but they are very notorious in the history of the Communist Party. It's because those two were war heroes. And then after the Communist Party came to power in 1949, and they were appointed as the senior officials in charge of Tianjin. And then they started to, relax and enjoy themselves, and so they started to accept bribes, and then fool around with women, and then I think reading the whole case sort of started is because I think this one of the guys wanted a certain woman, and she or. She said no or something else, and he pulled a gun and had that woman, shot that woman or something like that. Well, anyway, the case broke. Before the central government made that decision, that there was huge lobbying effort behind, just like what is happening now, to spare the two guys because they were war heroes. They have bullets all over their body. They really fought for the founding of the People's Republic. And then I think later on, Mao Zedong was the chairman, so he signed their death warrants. And until today, they were every time there was the Communist Party talk about corruption, they will say, they were the highest Communist Party official to be executed for corruption. And, of course, later on we get some other people. That case is cited. You see, when they talk about Bo Xilai, and that editorial cited that case again, which seemed to me is very interesting. You see, Bo is a Politburo member and also the former secretary of Chongqing. So if you mention Bo, that editorial should have mentioned Chen Xitong, the former party secretary of Beijing, and Chen Liangyu, the former party secretary of Shanghai. Both of guys were jailed for corruption. But they did not mention those two, but they mentioned Liu Qingshan, Zhang Zishan. What does it mean? They're building up the case for him to be executed? I don't know. So your guess is the best as mine. So, that's why we pay close attention to Xinhua, People's Daily, you know, their tones, how they address this. I mean, you know, although China's opening up and you know, a lot of things being said online, but still, we still try to read between the lines. I mean, because, you know, that's our job.
Okay, next question. David?
Thanks. David Schlesinger, Thomson Reuters. Can you tell us a little bit about the Guox's proprietors? How do they just care about the bottom line? Do they talk to you about the news? Do they talk to you about the line that you take? How to play stories?
Okay. that's a very tough question. you see, just bear in mind that I have been only doing this job for 2 months. You guys may believe that I'm just, you know, saying this to curry favor with my bosses. But I would like to say, you know, they're the best boss I can work with. Because, you know, for one thing, that's without their support, I would not have survived for this long at SCMP with the revolving door of the editorship, you see. And this, the second thing I want to say that the Quarks, particularly my boss, Hui Quark, and she shares my passion for journalism. The thing that she told me is that we got to be fair and balanced, and we need to be passionate about news, and we don't have to shy away from from any story, and that's what I have been doing. You see, I only worked for a few newspapers, you know, China Daily, Eastern Express, and SCMP. I don't know what's the relationship between the editor-in-chief of other newspapers, but I have read a lot about how Rupert Murdoch called his editors overnight and, you know, wanting like certain deadlines to be changed. And I never got any call. And that's not, this relationship is so far so good. Thank you.
Okay. Next, Bodine, please.
Hi, is this on? Bodine, England. We've heard a lot about Hong Kong and China, obviously. There have been times in the past at the South China Morning Post where there's been much more extensive foreign coverage, and in particular for the rest of Asia, including Southeast Asia, and actually covering areas outside Greater China from their own point of view, not just as adjuncts to China. Do you have any plans for anything of that, or is it purely, now we think of it purely as a China paper?
It's a very good question, and it's a very relevant question, and I'm going to tell you that. No. I mean, because, you know, we want to be the most authoritative newspaper in English language in Hong Kong and China, not only on Hong Kong and China, but also on Southeast Asia. You see, I mean, that part, as all of you know, is going to be more and more interesting in the South China Sea and other developments. And you raised a very interesting question, is that we'll continue to expand our foreign coverage. And I'm not quite sure whether this is the right time to say it, but I'm thinking of setting up previously we had some correspondents in Southeast Asia, but they are no longer there because of the budget cuts. But I'm still thinking, one thing that I want to do is I want to set up a team of correspondents, you know, like freelancers, and try to beef up our coverage on Southeast Asia, which is going to be a very, very important part of our overall coverage. And let me stress this again, that our coverage on Hong Kong, international issues, and more importantly, business, will never, never, ever be reduced just because I'm a mainlander that I want to expand our coverage on China. And I think, you know, all those areas are very important, are very critical to our coverage. And I know that many of you read our papers on international, local, Southeast Asia, and business news, and on all those fronts. And I want to do a much better job. And I know that, you know, this one talk will not convince some of you who, you know, as a journalist, are born to be skeptics. But just, I want to ask for your time and patience to continue to read our paper and make a judgment for yourself 6 months or 1 year later. And then I'll come back again if Anna Fenton will take to be the president again.
Okay, we have just time for two more questions. Francis?
Francis Moriarty, RTHK. As someone who comes from the mainland, I wonder how you view two things. The first is this upswelling of anti-mainland sentiment that we've seen, whether it's the mainland mothers or the locust ads or what have you. The second is the persistent question of Si Wailung's membership or non-membership in the Communist Party. And in that vein, maybe you could just tell us whether you've ever been a member.
I will answer your second question first. Is that the answer is no, and there was no story there. About the first question, I have to be very, very careful because of my mainland background. About the so-called anti-mainland sentiments. And to be honest with you, that's, you know, I read some reports in our paper and in the papers of some other Hong Kong media. But when I go outside, when I talk to people, my Hong Kong friends, I haven't seen any really anti-mainland sentiments. You see, every time, the thing that I get is every time I go into a department store, I go into a shop, if I speak Mandarin, and I get preferential treatment from the Hong Kong shop assistants. And that's not what I got, when I first landed in Hong Kong in 1993. That's, you know, if I spoke in Mandarin, I don't think I get the same service as the people who, as you guys who spoke in English. And regarding CY's Communist Party membership, I think I read more than once that CY denied he was a Communist Party membership. And it seemed to me there was no story there. And secondly, you know, whether he was a party membership or not, it seemed to me did not really should not really affect what he does. Someone that you should judge him by his performance.
Okay, last question, Ilaria. I think you had your hand up.
Hello, my name is Ilaria Maria Sala from La Stampa, Italian newspaper. When you were promoted to chief editor, I read some people who were taking your defense, saying if you had been a mainland journalist in the mainland, you'd be among those who are defended by those who care for freedom of expression as someone who was pushing the envelope, like Hu Shuli or Chang Ping, this kind of people. Of course, the envelope to be pushed in Hong Kong is a different one and of a different nature, including on news from China and how you report China news. So my question is, how are you pushing the envelope in Hong Kong? How do you see this being done in your newspaper?
That's a difficult question to answer because I don't know what envelope I should be pushing, because you know Hong Kong is a free society, right?
About China coverage.
About China coverage, you see the thing is that we are a Hong Kong paper, and we are based in Hong Kong, and so we, you know, we, as I said earlier, you know, we cover the news, you know, without fear and favor. You know, let me give you an example, like June 4th, that it is illegal in China to commemorate June 4th, but it's legal in Hong Kong, that every year that more than 100,000 people go to Victoria Park and, you know, hold the, you know, hold the ceremony. So we covered it as any other media organization in Hong Kong and in the international community. You know, as a real news, real event, we splash it on the paper, and you know, we use the big photo. So I don't see any difference, you know, in terms of China coverage. If you read, if you follow up on our coverage on Bo Xilai, we try to explore every possible angle. And there was the fact that, you know, whether, oh, this will, whether offend the Chinese government has never crossed our minds. You know, we are here to pursue the news, and if you follow up our coverage on CE election, on you know, on Bo Xilai, you know, we, you know, the only thing that I'm often worried about is that other papers scoop us on those news items. You see, the thing is that I used to be a mainland journalist myself. So you were, when you were inside the system, you know, that's one of the contradictions, that when you were inside the system, you knew a lot of stuff, but you could not write it. Now I was outside the system, and I really, really want to write more interesting stories about China, but I no longer had that access. So I think the thing that I really want to do, you know, in, you know, as editor in chief, is to, you know, as I said earlier, you know, just to report whatever the news that is important, that is relevant, and all I need to do is try to, you know, to be very fair and balanced, and you know, I think that's. That's it, and I would like to say thank you very much for your attention, and I will be here most of the time for the rest of the year, and so, and you know, all of you are my readers, so if you have any question or if you have anything you want to talk to me, send me an email and give me a call. I'll be very happy to talk to you guys again. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much from all of us, and here's the FCC present.